and now evangelist David Shannon.
Okay, as we begin today, let's turn to John, the 13th chapter. For review's sake, now what is our theme that we've been covering in John? What's John's theme for writing the book of John? Okay, John wrote the book to prove that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. He's not just a good man. He's not just a magician that could work some great miracles. He's not even a man that could work miracles. But John set out to prove that he's the Son of God. Man on earth, but God in man that could work those miracles. How does he set out to prove these things in the book of John? Okay, how many signs did John tell about? Think back. See, it's been a while since we reviewed him. You can tell it, right? How many signs did John... You know, John could have chosen enough signs to fill up the entire Bible, probably, with the different miracles, the different signs that Jesus worked. But he couldn't do that. So he chose only seven. And with those seven, he said these... And notice, John does not just call them miracles. He says these are signs, meaning that they point to the fact that he is the Son of God. All right, then he made, I believe it's about seven I am statements. And we've studied through several of the I am statements. Now today, one of the great things that chapter 13 is remembered for is that new commandment. Now what's that new commandment that he gives us in the 13th chapter? Okay, that you love one another. Now, is that really so new? Did he not command that before this time about love? What's new about it? Look down in verse 33, or no, that's 34. Verse 34, a new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. And by this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if ye have love one for another. Now I think all of us would have to admit that really the fact that we are to love one another was not the new part of that commandment. The new part of that commandment is how we are to love. The degree of love. You see, before love was commanded, but now he says, I'm going to give you a new commandment. You love as I have loved you. See, that's the new part. That's the degree. And he says, and if you do that, that's how people are going to know that you're my followers. Now, many times, as we do with many verses, and many times we do not mean any harm in it, but we take that one verse or those two verses and we just study those without studying the context. So this morning, the reason we skip down towards the end of the chapter is I want us to think about this verse, these two verses, as we study the entire chapter. Because when we see it in context, we're going to see this morning a great demonstration of Jesus' love. Once we see the context this verse is in, it gives much more meaning to it of why he would tell his disciples to love as I have loved you. If someone will, read the first three verses for us. Who would volunteer for that? John 13, 1 through 3. Hey, Brother Miller, and as he reads this, I want us to notice out of these three verses, we're going to see three things that Jesus knew at this time in the Passover. Okay, what's the first thing we can know from verse 1 or that Jesus knew? Okay, he knew his hour was coming. No doubt about it. He didn't think, well, you know, God has said that he sent me to this earth because I might have to die sometime. He knew that that was coming and it was coming very soon. No longer was it his time has not come, but as we saw last week, now Jesus starts speaking. The hour is at hand. The hour has come. Now, according to verse 2, what's another thing that we can know that Jesus knew? Okay, the betrayal. And the reason we can know that Jesus knew that also is because, see verse 11? Verse 11, Jesus says, or it said of Jesus, for he knew who should betray him. So there at the supper being ended, the devil having now been in the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. So Jesus knew that Satan was in the heart of Judas. He knew that he was going to be betrayed by Judas. There was no doubt. He knew those things. What did he know according to verse 3? Okay. Now, with those three thoughts in mind, he knew his hour was at hand. He knew he was going to be betrayed and by whom. And he knew that he had all things in his power. Now think about that last verse, the last few verses there in 34 and 35 again. Remember we talked about the love he had and the love he showed? Isn't it amazing that he could love Judas the way he did that night? Isn't it amazing that there Judas was sitting there and he knew that the time of his death was at hand? He knew Judas was the one to do that. And he didn't mistreat Judas. He didn't treat him with any kind of hatred. He looked over at Peter. What did he know about Peter? He knew Peter was going to deny him three times. He knew it. He loved Peter. He didn't mistreat Peter. He knew that many of the apostles sitting around the table were going to be very confused. And it was going to seem as if they were turning against Jesus. They, in a sense, were going to flee. They were going to kind of stay far away because they were fearful of their life as well. He knew that many of them, practically everyone in that room, was going to in some way desert him during the most trying time upon the face of this earth. He was going to be left alone. He knew that when he went in the garden to pray, that they were going to fall asleep. Now, it's amazing. Jesus, now keep that in mind, Jesus then says, you love others as I have loved you. You know, that gives it another twist, another turn, doesn't it? You see, no longer can I treat you a little bit different. No longer can I say, you know, I can't stand that person. Well, why can't you stand? Because they did something against me. You see, I know something they said about me. I know what they did against me. And I'm not guessing. It's fact. I know it. And that's why I don't like them. Well, that's where this verse comes into play. To love as Jesus loved. Now, I'm not saying to you this morning that anyone here this morning needs to like someone in the sense that you enjoy being around them. That's never commanded. Never commanded. But the one thing that is commanded is agape love. That's what Jesus is speaking of here when he speaks of I have loved you. It's agape love. He says, I have treated you as you should always have been treated. He says, now you go and you treat everyone else as they should be treated. And it's by that people will know that you are my follower. So you see, we can't go around and to let the reaction or the action of others determine the way we treat them. Oh, it may determine how much we enjoy being around them. It may determine whether or not, as we say, we like them. But it should never determine agape love, as Jesus said. All right, let's look a little farther here. If someone read for us verses 4, 5, and 6. Brother Bowers. Okay. What's the custom here about the washing of feet? Hmm. Okay? Okay. Okay, they wore sandals. They traveled on the dirt roads, the dust, the grit, the grime would be in there between their shoes and their feet. And it was just a courtesy. It was a custom that any time you went into guest homes, they offered to wash your feet. Just like today we might say, can I take your coat? It was a custom. Now, usually in that day and time, who carried out this custom? Okay, the servants. Most any time, if there was a servant in the household, that was the one who carried it out. What do you think maybe the apostles were thinking before Jesus arose to carry out this task? What would you and I be thinking? We were sitting around the table. You knew that was always the custom. What might our thoughts be, or what might the apostles' thoughts be? Okay. And what did you say? Okay. I think both of those answers are appropriate. But many of them are probably sitting there thinking, well, who's going to do it? You know, it. Okay, right. Peter definitely did not. He voiced his opinion. But I'm sure they sat there and they thought, now who's going to do it? Maybe there's supposed to be a servant come up here in this room. What? Where's the person? But the last thing they considered was, not me. I'm sure many of them, as he mentioned, were thinking, you know, here I am, I'm following the great master teacher. And I'm hoping to be one of his greatest in the kingdom. So it's not a place for me. I shouldn't even have to consider washing the feet because I've been following for a good while now. I'm one of his close followers, so there's no reason for me to have to worry about washing anyone's feet this evening. But Jesus teaches a powerful lesson. Sounds kind of like a cop-out, but really any kind of service, and especially the kind of service what the same danger, the same temptation will fall into, is any kind of service that we would be looking for someone else. You know, that's really, I guess, one of Satan's most favorite temptations, is seeing something that needs to be done and waiting for the next guy to do it. Oh, well, there'll be someone to take care of that. There'll be someone to take care of that. But right off the top of my head, I can't think of an example that maybe would be a real close comparison to washing of the feet. But, you know, there's so many things today that, you know, immediately our reply is, well, so-and-so takes care of that. And you know, that's a dangerous situation when we start seeing a need and just saying, well, that's not my responsibility because that's not my job title. You know, I'm not the servant here. So-and-so takes care of this position. You see, someone that may, say if you see your neighbor needs food. Now, and let's just bring it down to a good old example. Your next door neighbor lives right beside you, needs food. And you know they need food. Wouldn't it be a dangerous situation to say, well, you know, I know Brother Bowers does a lot for the church in benevolence, so maybe I should call him. He can take care of it. You know, that's getting pretty dangerous when we see needs and we know, well, if someone else has that title, someone else has that position, someone else, you know, we need to be willing like Jesus. He didn't wait for someone else to do it. And he didn't think that's not his area. And he didn't think he was too good. And good lesson for us to learn today.
Thank you.
That's right. Right. We also could go ahead and point out, do you think these gentlemen would not be able to even walk if their feet were not washed? Sure they would. They'd be walking with dirty feet, but they'd be able to go ahead. Well, you know, sometimes we want to wait till something has to be done. Well, yeah, maybe they need a little help, but they're not that bad of shape. They still have a job. You know, they're still making a living. Just let them pull through on their own. You know, Jesus gets up and He does a task that hardly ever is one of the master of the home or the head of the home. He's usually the last one to wash anyone's feet. And He does even a task that could have been left undone. But, of course, Jesus, He is the great servant. He's the great teacher. He's the great example. So He gives us a beautiful example to look at here as we think about service to each other and exactly what is meant when He says, love others as I have loved you. And again, we're going to see so many things in this chapter that give Jesus reason to follow up with that new commandment. So I'm sure that as they sat around the table that night and He told them that, after them seeing these different things, that commandment had a strong, powerful meaning to them about love as He had for them. Now, as we read there, verse 6, He came to Simon Peter. What did old Peter say to Him? Okay. Wash my feet? Now, what about old Peter here? Did he think he was too good? No. Good old Peter. He's always the one that he speaks out to let everyone know that he loves the Lord and he has an awesome respect for the Lord. And then you say, oh, but there's that one time. Or really, three times he didn't. Yes, he made his mistakes too. But you got to give Peter credit. He was the one that wanted to make sure, maybe in a more vocal way than the others, but many times we see in the Scriptures him wanting to make sure that his love for the Lord was seen by the Lord Himself. And so here he washes the feet, but he comes to Peter, and Peter just can't imagine. You're washing my feet? And what's Jesus' answer to that? Okay. Peter, you don't let me wash your feet. You're not going to have any part of me. Now, what did he really mean by that? What's the deeper meaning here? Was he really just talking about feet? Was he saying to Peter, now listen, I want to wash your feet this one time, and if you say no this one time, forget it. You'll never be in the kingdom of heaven. Is that? That's really not what he was trying to teach here. What was he trying to say here to Peter? Okay, that very well could be the case. What do you think his meaning in saying this particular line to Peter, though? Was he not saying something like, service is a two-way street? You know, we can't just go out and serve others and never allow God to serve us and allow Jesus to serve us. It's a two-way street. I need to make sure I know what Jesus expects of me. And I need to make sure I know the blessings that Jesus gives me as He serves us. See, Jesus is definitely a servant to us today in the sense that He's our Savior. He's the one that went and paid our price on the cross. He's the one that can give us the only way of remission of sin. And so here, in a sense, if I understand it correctly, He's saying to Peter, He says, listen, if you don't let me be a servant to you, you can never be in the kingdom of heaven. You've got to accept my ways before you can ever go out and help others. Definitely. True today. True for as long as the earth stands. We have to accept Jesus' ways and Jesus' servanthood before we can ever go out and display that same type of love and that same type of servanthood to others. Now, what's Peter's answer here? Peter just, he tickles me to death. I like old Peter. Now, what did he say here? Oh, Lord, wash my hands, wash my head. If it means I have a part of you, just wash me up. You know, I don't know. I doubt he was being comical at all. But Peter, his attitude is beautiful here. An attitude we need to have. An attitude of, well, Lord, serve me the greatest way you can serve me if it means I'm a part of your kingdom. Peter so often made it so clear that he wanted to be a part of that kingdom. He wanted to be a part of Jesus' followers, and he wanted to do it to the best of his ability. And he didn't want anybody to go against Jesus. Remember in the Garden of Gethsemane, he always wanted to protect Jesus. We know he made his mistakes, but yet there's so much we can learn of Peter as well. All right, as we look on now, let's look at verse 12. If someone will start reading at verse 12 and read on for, I tell you, just read for a few verses and I'll stop you there. Who would like to read that? Okay. All right. What was his main application here out of all this he did? What was the main application in verse 16 that Jesus gives for his reasoning behind this? Who what now? Okay. Humility. And what does he even go so far as, you know, we can, if Jesus just taught humility alone without giving us something to really recognize as a sign of humility, it might be hard for us to understand. But when he spoke of humility here, what was the thing that seemed so different than what they were accustomed to? What did he say about it? When you make yourself a servant, what have you done? Okay. All right. That's right. And so here he lets them know that really the servant is the greatest. You know, you humble yourself to the point where you'll do any task that you see needs to be done. He says, now that's the greatest. And then we know from studying Matthew 25, passage that you're all familiar with, and they say, Lord, when have we seen you hungry? When have you seen you thirsty, in prison, naked? And he says, when you've done this to the least of mine, you've done it to me. And he says, those are the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. You see, it's a powerful lesson that we see over and over in the Scriptures. But it's that lesson that Monday through Saturday sometimes is hard to remember. You know, it's so hard to remember day in and day out. Well, I'm really doing the greatest thing I can ever do for the Lord by serving. Because just by our nature alone, we want to be reminded that greatness comes in ease, that greatness comes in relaxation. You know, you don't see the rich out digging ditches. You don't see the rich out, you know, mowing their own yard. You don't see the rich out repaving their own driveway. We want to think that riches and honor and greatness and all those things are a life of ease. But then we think, well, I want to be a great Christian. Well, that same definition for great and that same definition for honor, those things for a Christian are not the same as we see in our society today. To be a great Christian and to be a Christian that deserves honor is the one that works, the one that serves, the one that never stops, never relaxes and says, well, you know, I've done enough for the past few years. I want to take some time off for a few months. We can't take time off when it comes to the Lord. So he taught some powerful lessons in this chapter about servanthood.
13, verse 3 and 4, that Jesus takes the place of God.
Okay. All right. He says to he's saying that a good comparison of the humility is taking 18th chapter, first few verses where Jesus takes the child. And again, that's a powerful lesson. I look forward to getting to that chapter. Powerful lesson where Jesus he's humble enough that anyone is important to him. It doesn't have to be a great king or someone in a powerful position. He says, "Well, bring the little children. They're just as important." So we see some powerful lessons of Jesus in his servanthood and his humility. Let's look at Judas for a few moments now. In the next few verses, he is identified as the betrayer. If someone to read, start in verse 21 and read 9 or 10 verses there. We'll read down to maybe verse 30 there. Who'd like to read that for us? Start verse 20. Okay, so we see here that good old Peter again, he's curious. Jesus has announced that someone's going to betray him. So he leans over to John, he says, ask him. Ask him who it is. John asks, and so Jesus there tells that, verse 26, whoever I give this piece of bread to that I dip down in this wine, he says, that's the one. So he hands it to Judas. Now, isn't this amazing here? He hands it to Judas, and what do the ones around think? What does it say there in 28? Now, no man at the table knew for what intent he spake this unto him. So no man really knew. Now, that's amazing how they could misunderstand him so badly there when it seemed so clear. But they did. They misunderstood him. And then, not only did they just not know, but they had a wrong idea of what it really was. Because there in verse 29 it says, well, they thought that he was either going to, that Judas got up to leave, where he could either go out and buy more bread for the feast or to buy bread for the poor. But they still didn't know exactly why he left. You know, that can be a powerful lesson for us this morning as well. We need to realize that many people in the denominational world are making what to them is an honest mistake. If we want to say they're good people, they love the Lord, but they are mistaken. You know, if we really understand that and believe it, it'll help us have such a much better attitude when we go and try to persuade them and show them the truth. You know, it's sad to see people that think that everyone out in the denominational world knows that maybe what they're looking at is wrong, and they think that they're doing it intentionally. That's a bad attitude to have for people. I think it's much better to understand that many people are making honest mistakes. Now, that doesn't make their mistake right, but it can help us to understand. Here, Jesus' teaching seems so plain, but they misunderstood it. We need to understand today, Jesus' teaching seems so plain, but it is easy to misunderstand it as well. We need to have that love and that compassion for the truth and for lost souls. And then when we go to talk with people, we need to never compromise the truth, but we need to still have that same love for the truth and for the lost souls, and usually we'll receive better results. So here is, he rushes out. We'll close with this one point. Then, that's when Jesus, see in verse 31, therefore when he was gone out, Jesus said, now it says he was gone out, that's speaking of Judas. So Judas has left. Jesus said, now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God be glorified in him, God shall also glorify him in himself, and shall straightway glorify him. Little children, a little while I'm with you. And then he says he's gone. Then in verse 34, he says, this is a new commandment. Love one another as I have loved you. And then verse 35, he says, this is how you can know, they can know that you are my disciples. It's amazing how Jesus really gets down into some teachings on love. And to open up just a little more once Judas has left. You know, it's hard for someone to open up and to share their inner feelings when they know someone in the room is against them. How many times have we made it difficult for someone to worship as they should have worshiped because we had mistreated someone and they knew we were in their presence? How many times has it been difficult for someone to share the truth about a certain scripture because they knew we were in the presence and that we didn't respect that scripture ourselves? You see, we can put a hardship on people that are trying to carry out good causes simply because of our presence and because of our disobedience. Here, Jesus is a perfect man. He was powerful, so I'm not trying to say in any way that he did not have enough strength to say these things while Judas was present. But nevertheless, he did say them after he had left. Maybe he thought that it wasn't worth it for Judas to hear those words because Satan had already entered into him. But he did wait after Judas had left before he shared the new commandment with them. We need to realize today our obedience and our presence can be a powerful, great influence for the Lord. Our disobedience and our presence can be a powerful damage for the Lord.